And we want to thank you so much for downloading our podcast. It's called Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries. Our mission, our goal, is to teach what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money. In the Bible, you will come across over 2,500 verses that deal specifically God's plan for us on how we should handle the treasures that He has given us. And we teach these principles in our small group Bible study called Faith and Money Matters. You can learn more, take a little sneak preview of the study by going to compasscatholic.org and click on Books and Studies. My name is Steve Holbrook, and with me are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. Well, leading the news and just about every topic of conversation is the coronavirus. And I'd say it's safe to say that this virus is impacting everyone in some manner. And today we have as our guest our financial expert, John Kennedy. Now, John is a financial advisor, and his company is Candor Path here in Orlando.
So we wanted today to kind of take a look at the financial aspects of the virus and what it's doing to the stock markets, but do it from a biblical perspective so that we can help people to understand how they should be reacting, if they should be reacting, and if they should be, what should their reaction be? So we really appreciate you coming in and being with us today.
Yeah, John, thank you so much for having me back again. And
there's some variation of the term fear not cited in the Bible 365 times.
One for every day of the year, right?
One for every day of the year. And at first I thought that's ironic. And then I thought, well, that's probably not so ironic that that's the case. And so it doesn't mean that you should, you know, that you shouldn't handle or possibly control situations that you can control, but being fearful and worrisome of things, that just brings no good.
Let's relate this back to some previous drops in the market that we've experienced. You know, there was a huge drop in 1987, and then more recently, because some of our listeners weren't even born in 1987, we had a huge drop in 2008. So, how do you relate what's happening today in 2020 as opposed to the previous situation?
Well, I think one big key distinction is that this is not, there's not an underlying financial issue. I mean, if you look back a month ago, some of our economic numbers were as strong as they've ever been. And so this has more to do with an actual health crisis than it is an underlying financial systemic problem within our economy. So we've had various scenarios. I mean, if you look back going all the way to 1900, there have been 36 occasions where we've been through a quote unquote bear market, which is a 20% or more pullback in, you know, the major index that we're following. In this case, S&P or Dow Jones. And in every instance, the market has come back to hit new highs. That whether that took 3 months, 3 years, 6 years or longer, it certainly depended on the situation. But in this particular case, I think a lot of economists are hopeful that this will be more of a V-shaped type recovery where we see it bounce back a little bit quicker as the virus, hopefully throughout the summer, starts to dissipate.
Has any market ever dropped so much in so few days?
No. In fact, I mean, it's being related back to 1987 because that was like the single biggest day drop that we've experienced in the U.S. stock market. In the last 10 trading days, there hasn't been more 4% positive or negative swings in a given day than we've seen in the entire history of the U.S. stock market.
As we're in this bear market, you know, it's like on a trampoline, up and down and down and up and, you know, whatever. What does that mean to the typical investor? And from a scriptural standpoint, in my mind, we shouldn't be reacting the way we're reacting.
Well, I think it's easy to let some of the mania and some of the information that we're seeing in the news dictate our emotion. And then the problem is when you're in an emotional state, you're making reactionary decisions when it comes to your money. The biggest thing we've been talking with clients about is, hey, there's a plan in place and let's stick with that plan. Let's not, we all want to buy low and sell high. This would be doing the exact opposite of that if we reacted to bad market news. And if we said, okay, well, things are down, this is making me nervous. I think it's, you have to have a longer term perspective than that.
Steve was talking the other day about one of his friends who completely got out of the market and put everything in cash. Right. That's really not a good idea, is it?
Well, I guess timing matters. Depends on when he did it. Depends on when he did it.
In the middle of a crisis.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm referring to. That's so reactionary. By the time you wait to realize that you were taking too much risk and that the pain point of the market dropping that much really impacted you emotionally as an investor, that it was too late. Like that's too late of a reaction. And so we talk about being proactive, and in fact, really we're doing the exact opposite of that. You know, we're looking at this as an opportunity to buy into the market and the major indexes as a result of the drop. And I think, you know, a lot of this for us, we talk about creating rules around how you view investing and how you view your long-term money. And so if someone said, hey, you know, I've got X amount of dollars, I want to lump sum into the market right now, what am I going to do with it? Or how should I do that? Instead of saying, well, let's try to time this thing at the very bottom, because nobody can do that. That's just so impossible. Maybe take that number, divide it by 12, and put that in over a monthly period of time over the next year, so that you're ensuring that you're buying up at the dips or as the market continues to remain volatile, which it very likely could for the rest of the year be a volatile market.
So the basic message is don't get overreactionary, right?
Correct.
Calm down, everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe view it as an opportunity to even rebalance the portfolio. Now, if you're targeting a 50-50 portfolio, 50% risk on and 50% risk off, those percentages are now different than they were 3 weeks ago. So that risk on percentage is now a lesser piece of that pie. Let's look to rebalance the portfolio to get it back to what your mandated financial plan stated.
So are a lot of your clients overreacting and panicking, or is it?
I don't think so. We've had a lot of really good proactive conversations. So part of this is why we have, for a lot of clients, we talk about having a disaster budget. We talk about having enough money in cash to last you 12 months. We've even talked about this on the podcast. So I really, that's not been the case for us. But as I see it, you know, the average investor is having that emotional reaction.
Well, it's hard not to when everybody around you is panicking and buying up 18,000 rolls of toilet paper and bringing them home. And, you know, there's no eggs in the grocery store and no milk. And it feels like we're getting ready for a huge hurricane here in Florida. But we really just all need to take a deep breath.
Yes.
And relax.
It's a little ominous.
Everything's off kilter.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
You know, there's a verse, steady plotting brings prosperity. Mm-hmm. Hasty speculation brings waste.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people are getting into at this point in time, because they're reacting to today and they've forgotten their plans. I think that almost any financial planner that you talk to would say you have to be in for the long term, not the short term.
Yeah.
As far as thinking about retirement or college education or those kind of things.
And I think that it's so good that we're doing this podcast right now, because that's easier said than done for many people. You know, there's a visceral reaction to loss in seeing a portfolio go down that creates such a sense of panic. Then you throw on top of it everything that's going on around, you know, outside of that, in terms of the grocery stores being empty and stuff like that. It really creates that sense of panic. But I think, you know, when we invest, we all philosophically know things will go up and things will go down. Like, we all know that. It's almost become, especially in the last decade, we've become so accustomed to the markets going up that when we have this real panic, you know, the market's dropping and this flash sale in the way that it has, it creates that panic and that feeling of scarcity. And so it's good to have this conversation, because what we really want to talk to people about is not reacting that way.
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, is a comfort for us is that we have an emergency budget. So if things really tank, we know exactly what to cut, where to cut it, how to cut it. And, you know, we developed that years and years ago, but it's still in place. So it might not be fun. We might not be able to get to do some of the nice things that we do now, but we know exactly how to cut and what to do.
Well, and not only that, but having at least 12 months of cash on the sidelines to, if you wanted to live the, you know, the life that you were prior to all of this, because it allows you to ride out that storm a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where I wanted to go also, Evelyn, was having a crisis budget.
Yeah.
Because like you said, John, it allows you to ride out the storm.
Mm-hmm.
I think the longest bear market that we've ever had lasted like a year and a quarter or something like that. Well, if you've got, like you've said, a year's worth of cash or maybe a little bit more, you're going to be able to ride that out, and you're not going to have to sell stocks that are depreciated. When you do that, then you really lose big time.
Well, I think it allows you to channel that energy into things that you can control. Like you can control your budget. You can control your spending. It's really hard to control what the markets do. Nobody can do that, right? And so reacting to that way and worrying about the things we cannot control, that, like we said earlier on in this podcast, that does nobody good. But being able to focus that energy on something positive that you can control, like your budget, like your spending, where you're putting cash, that type of stuff, that turns this into an actionable thing that we can actually do something with.
And I think that's the key for a lot of people, is there's so much out there that's out of their control that it just gives you a sense of panic or unease or whatever you want to call that. Really, there's nothing in life we can control.
And I think too, I mean, I've got some graphs and things that I'd like to share in connection with this podcast that you guys can share with your audience, but having perspective of seeing the different periods of time where there's been dips in the market, corrections, bear markets, what have you, and then seeing how quickly those came back and then hit new highs in the market. I mean, it's important to have that perspective of long-term investing. And so some of these charts, I think, will be helpful to see that too.
We'll post them on the website.
The other thing that I think is really important is I had an interesting trade of text messages yesterday with a friend of mine who's a deacon. At their parish, they had Mass, and they also live streamed the Mass. And he had like 31 people watching the Mass live. Throughout the day yesterday, they had almost 600 people watch the Mass.
Wow.
And because it was live, he could see who was watching it. And he says some of those people haven't been in church in a long time. And I related that back to 9/11 and how the churches were just totally filled with people. Everybody turned to God. And in the years since that, everybody has very slowly, or maybe in some cases very rapidly, forgot about that God exists and everything that we have belongs to God. You know, people aren't thinking about that now. Even all that toilet paper, that's all God's. And this may help to bring them back to God. And because it's happened within 20 years, most everybody has had a chance to experience it. And I think it makes it even more important that what we're teaching with the Compass Bible Studies is a godly perspective. And if you can absorb that mentality into your everyday life, it's extremely important.
Well, and what I would say to that too is that, this whole term, am I getting this right? It's called social distancing.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's like that's a really popular term right now.
Yes.
Maybe we can look at that and embrace it a little bit, and that can be an opportunity to have some time to ourselves to reflect and pray and focus more on God as opposed to just being in the hustle and bustle of our daily lives.
Well, that's one thing I think is that, you know, with the kids being home from school, I'm sure it's a hardship for a lot of parents that have both parents working. But if you can spend some time with your kids where you don't have the busyness of sports activities and after school activities and this and that and the other thing that just seems to tear the family apart, you know, that's a good thing that comes out of this, is the fact that you've got more quiet time, like you said, more time to pray, time to talk to the kids about what's really important and why all this swirl around us is happening.
Well, the first things to get canceled were what? Sports.
Yep.
That's the one thing that is probably the largest distractor or detractor or cause for not going to church among families, is because their kids are all participating in sports and they have them on Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening and Saturday and during the week, and there's no time for church, they think, because they're focused on sports. And the first thing that gets canceled, sports.
It just reminds you of what's really important versus what society tells us is important. You know, society is never going to say, slow down, spend more time with your family. That's where your priorities are. It's all about being and going and doing and having.
Yeah, and I think it's maybe easier said than done to do this, but it is kind of nice to look at this as a way of an opportunity to spend more time with family. and be thinking about and talking about God with your kids. I mean, we have two kids at home, 6 months old and 3 years old. And so we're going to get to spend more time with them in the next 2 weeks than I normally would get to during the course of a busy work week. So, and I'll still be working, right? I mean, we're able to work from home. Thank God. We have a lot of advances in technology these days that allows that opportunity to do that. But it'll be nice to be able to spend more time with family.
You know, I was wondering how this whole work from home and the whole school from home thing is going to change the future.
Yeah.
You know, if now that we've experienced several weeks of school from home, are the kids even going to want to go back to school?
Right.
Is learning from home a better option for a lot of families? You know, so I think there's going to be long-term implications to this that we don't understand yet. So, John, one of the long-term things may be that more people are encouraged to have a crisis budget.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's too late to start now if they don't have one at this moment in time?
No, definitely not. What's that term? Necessity is the mother of invention. So I think for a lot of people, if they don't have a crisis budget right now, it's forcing them to really think about it and figure out where they need to be cutting in terms of their expenditures. We've definitely seen, even just within the clients we work with, lots of cancellations for vacations, summer trips, summer activities. And so that right there is obviously a forced savings. It's then, okay, what are we going to do with that money? Well, maybe we apply that to our crisis budget. Maybe we increase our buffer for our cash emergency savings, but it's absolutely not too late.
And the worst thing people can do is try to sustain their lifestyle with credit at this point in time.
Oh, gosh, absolutely.
I think that this gives people a great opportunity to really look at their income flow and understand what a crisis means. You know, for example, if both the husband and the wife are now essentially laid off, maybe they're getting pay and maybe they're not, This gives them a good opportunity to say, okay, first of all, it says we got to deal with this right now. Okay, so how much income do we have and how do we distribute that among all the various bills we have, like rent or mortgage and car payments and things like that? Then moving forward, you know, when we get through this in the next 30 days, 60 days, what, 90, what, I don't know what it, how long it's going to take. When we get through it, it's an opportunity to say, okay, we have done this over the last X number of days, and this is what happened. How do we adjust this crisis budget to be workable in the future when something happens like this? And I think that's an extremely important thought process that people need to go through. Because to be perfectly honest, you know, we talk about a crisis budget all the time, but not very many people really have a crisis budget. For that matter, not very many people, probably 50 to 60%, don't even have an emergency fund. These are things that, you know, it ought to be a slap in the face right now, a wake-up slap, that these are things that we really need to have. Wouldn't you agree?
I do. And I think it's certainly a good opportunity and serves as a reminder to revisit some of the core principles that are part of your workshops that you guys teach, or just a core financial foundation is having an emergency bucket and knowing where your expenses are going. But everybody wants to jump to chapter 20 and do the fun stuff like investing in their 401k. And I get that. It's all very exciting. But in moments of crisis like this, it really presents an opportunity to be reminded, that's right, this is why we need to start with chapter one and have that emergency bucket and have that crisis budget.
Okay, now speaking of an emergency fund, what if I'm getting ready to retire in the next 6 months or so? Should I be doing something different than I'm doing right now, or can I still plan on retiring? What's your take on that?
I think it depends. I think if in preparation moving into retirement, obviously, as one gets older, the idea is to be rebalancing and taking on less risk as we get closer and closer to retirement. I think this is yet another example of an opportunity for someone to perhaps realize that they were taking on more risk than they wanted to if the portfolio has had such a big, you know, fall from the top. And so it definitely depends. The question that we often ask in this situation is quite simple. There's a lot that goes into it, but it's pretty simple. Is what's going on right now going to impact my ability to live the life I want to in retirement? So basically said another way, am I going to have to decrease the draw from my portfolio to some degree because of what's happening? If the answer to that question is yes, we need to make an adjustment, then perhaps deferring retirement until we get through this stage of volatility is advisable. And it's just really dependent upon the answer to that question.
John, one of the things that concerns me, and I've seen a couple of news reports that have kind of alluded to this, but it seems to me like this crisis is bringing out the worst in some people who are creating various scams to take everybody's money. Have you seen that? And what are they and how do we react to that?
I think the biggest risk that we're all exposed to in this scenario is everyone's going to be online a lot more in the next few weeks. People are going to be using Wi-Fi, connecting to Facebook, connecting to their bank accounts, looking at their 401k balances. And so just practicing good principles in terms of internet safety, not going to, we're probably not with social distancing, we're probably not going to a coffee shop right now anyway, but not using an open Wi-Fi network to connect to your bank account. I think the articles I've read and the biggest threat out there is hackers being able to get into, with the online activity being as high as it is, being able to access information because people are doing it in unsecured ways themselves, and then they get exposed. So maybe tightening those passwords, making sure we're on secure networks.
So if I'm at home and I'm looking, let's say, at my portfolio, I should actually log out. I shouldn't just close the window.
Right.
So I always have to make sure I log out of everything.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. I think another idea would be mortgage rates have dropped dramatically. So whenever that happens, you see there's a lot of misinformation out there as it relates to financing or refinancing a mortgage. And so you want to make sure you're working with a mortgage lender or a mortgage broker that you trust. Not that that's necessarily a quote unquote scam that's out there, but I always get nervous about underlying hidden costs, things that people don't know, and they get roped into, hey, look, rates are really, really low, let's do this. And then they spend $10,000 to refinance their mortgage and they didn't realize that they were going to spend that much money.
Well, the other thing I can think of that might happen is the scam calls from supposed grandchildren. I'm sick, I need money, I'm stuck in some other country, or that whole call where grandma and grandpa has to give money to somebody that isn't really even related to them.
That's done these days. We've seen that more with emails. So, we'll see emails go out, an email address will get hacked. And these days, people are really digging deep, and hackers are digging deep into their emails to almost talk as if they're like their style of typing, how they would converse in an email to a grandparent or a parent, and send messages back and forth about needing money. So that's a scary thing for sure. It's just, it's something to be mindful of.
In Luke 8, verse 18, Jesus warns us, take care then how you hear. And I guess that could be paraphrased by be careful what you listen to and how you perceive it, and especially when it comes to receiving investment advice. I can't imagine anybody's emergency budget or crisis budget that includes buying 10 cases of toilet paper.
Right.
But if we are really careful, I think is the right. If we're careful
discerning.
With what
I think
we
discerning.
Heard, discerning, yeah. If we're discerning about what we hear and who we talk to and what position these people have when we're talking about things like money and investing and those kinds of things, it will put us all in a much better stead than if we are just going willy-nilly.
And overreacting to everything that's around us.
Absolutely.
So, John, we're coming to the end of our podcast. Give us some takeaways of what people can do to get through this.
I think certainly going back to what we said before, focusing on what you can control and not worrying or stressing about what you can't control. Actionable things that we can control would be looking at our emergency savings, finding ways to focus on our crisis budget and spend less where we can, potentially rebalancing the portfolio if we have set parameters about how much risk we want to be taking, because now is certainly an opportunity to be able to buy low and sell high, and maybe even considering a mortgage refinance if that makes sense for the situation, because we've seen rates, mortgage rates specifically, come to a lower point. I've been saying it for like the last 5 years that mortgage rates are going up, and I continue to be proven wrong. So, and last but not least, maybe enjoying this social distancing thing. you know, looking at that as an opportunity to spend more time with family, more time on thought and prayer, and looking at it from that perspective.
John, I'd like to close with a verse from Philippians chapter 4, verses 11 through 13. It says, I have learned in whatever situation I find myself to be self-sufficient. I know indeed how to live in humble circumstances and also how to live with abundance. In every circumstance and in all things, I've learned the secret of being well-fed and of going hungry, of living in abundance and being in need. I have the strength for everything through Him who empowers me. As we've experienced this coronavirus, we're all feeling abundance and want, and we just have to learn, we have to be content with the situation we're in now. Don't overreact and just turn to God. The last straw, turn to God and be with Him and include Him in all that you do.
What an excellent and timely verse to close today's show with. And speaking of today's show, if you would like to share this show with a family member and friends, it's available first on our website, compasscatholic.org. Just scroll down and click on the button that says podcast. You'll also find our podcast on iTunes. Click on podcast when you get there and search for Compass Catholic. And the name of the show is How to Handle a Financial Pandemic. Also want to let you know that the graphs that John Kennedy was referring to, Evelyn has posted those graphs as part of the blog, How to Handle a Financial Pandemic. You will find the blog at compasscatholic.org. And if you have any feedback or comments on today's show that you would love to share with us, we would like to hear from you. That email address is info@compasscatholic.org. And for John and Evelyn Bean, we want to thank you so much for spending your time with us today. And remember, during this challenging time, great idea to turn to God. Pray every day. Pray multiple times a day, asking Him for peace, guidance, and more importantly, a little calm in your life. This has been Manage Your Money God's Way. And don't forget to check out our website, compasscatholic.org.